treat the obstacles as part of the process. They will always be there. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the, you know, how I mentioned that when I wrote the book, I then reviewed and researched the neuroscience behind it. So I looked at some of the things that I had done and that had worked and thought, well, why does this work?
Welcome to Ready, Set, Goal, the podcast that helps you turn your dreams into reality. We'll give you your regular dose of motivation along with our insights to help you achieve your goals. Listen in as I share conversations with awesome influential guests who will inspire us and share their secrets behind their success in achieving their goals. Are you ready to move closer to your dream goal? I'm your host, Donna Campisi. I'm an inspirational speaker, author, and adventurer. I'm excited to bring you this podcast. Are you ready? Let's do it on Ready, Set, Goal. In 2013, Chris left a 100-hour per week job as an IT executive while renovating some home properties is a long-time passion for Chris. He looked back on his life of his achievements and failures, how he got there and what he did and what he believed. This led to writing a book on goal setting called Goal Setting for People Who Can't Set Goals. Chris delved into what worked for him and backed it up with the neuroscience research, which I'm really interested to find out how he did that. Chris now speaks, coaches and teaches goal setting techniques and neuro tricks. Chris is still in IT doing the occasional project management gig, but he mainly focuses outside of goal setting. His main focus is property development. Chris has a degree in electrical engineering and MBA and is a member of the Australian Institute of Project Management and the Australian Institute of Management. Chris lives in the Gold Coast in Australia. Welcome, Chris. Good to see
you. Thank you, Donna. Yeah, really nice to see you again too.
Yeah, well, no one's seeing us on this podcast, actually. They're only hearing us, but I'm getting the pleasure to see your smiling face. for listeners to know, I actually met Chris a few years back now and don't get the opportunity to chat as often as I'd like to. So this is a great opportunity for me to chat and for you to actually hear and learn from Chris and his experience in life and in goals. So Chris, to start off with, what would you say your most outstanding goal is that you've achieved, that you believe is your outstanding goal?
I think for me it was moving into property development. So we'd buy a house and renovate it and sell it and that sort of thing. But I really wanted to move into property development proper. I was working 80-100-hour weeks and I decided that I needed to run a marathon, which is just crazy. But anyway.
Run a marathon?
I'd get up at 4 in the morning and I'd go to train. I live in the hinterland on the Gold Coast, so lots of hills.
Beautiful.
And I'd have Tony Robbins in my ears and I'd go running. And I would think about, how am I going to get into property development? And that's when I come up with the concept of discovery goals. So the goal was to get into property management. I had no idea how, I had no idea when, I had no idea what it was going to look like. And so I set a goal to discover my way into that. So then I did courses and I would badger architects and town planners for, you know, they give you 20 minutes of their time for free. So I would do that. And I'd jump on the council websites and I'd look at other developments that had been done and see how they did it and what sort of paperwork and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And when I was doing the project management for the G20 IT when it was in Brisbane in 2014, I had the opportunity to invest in a property developer. So rather than buy property, I was investing in the developer. And for that year that I was doing the project management, I did some work for them, for the property developer, kind of on the side for free. I created some sales models for them and I read a lot of the reports. I saved them a whole bunch of money on various things that they were doing. So at the end of that G20 G20 gig, they offered me a job. They said, come work for us. So I did. So we built 120 apartments on the riverfront in West End in Brisbane.
Wow.
And that was my first. So I went from renovating to building a multi-story building.
That's impressive.
So I learned a lot. So that was the thing. And that for me consolidated the whole concept of discovery goals, because I'd pretty much done everything I needed to do to prepare for that opportunity. The door opened and I walked through it. People say one of the kind of goal setting myths, if you like, is people say, you know, you need to have a goal, you need to have a date, you need to blah blah blah. Well, no, you don't. You can have a goal to have a goal. Then you set all of the dates and the things on all of those precursor events, focusing on how am I going to get to that goal, whatever it looks like. I had no idea what it was going to look like, and that's what it ended up looking like. So now I have we did that was a 3-year project, and now I have a business partner, and we're doing our own, starting our own property development. So that's such an impressive story.
Yeah. What I love about that, Chris, is that you said you didn't know how, what, and whatever, but you actually said the goal, said it out loud, and just worked out what do I need to do to make it happen. And, you know, with your studying and so forth, and things are happening along the way. And I actually agree with you about setting a date. I talk about setting dates myself, but I also mention how if you don't reach that date, don't be so hard on yourself too. Like, things happen and there's a journey along the way, and enjoy that. Do you agree with enjoying the journey?
That's right. Most of the things in your life you can set the timetables for, right? If you're training for a marathon and the marathon's in June, you have no choice.
Yeah.
If you're studying for an exam, you have no choice. Yes. But pretty much everything else, you have a choice. So if those timetables run over, you don't beat yourself up, because that just sets you back psychologically.
Mm.
Just reset it. You're in control. I remember doing a workshop once, and this lady said, I set all these goals and I get closer to them, and I put so much pressure on myself. What am I going to do? And I said, well, change the date. She said, I can do that? Well, of course you can. It's your goal. Change the date. Just move it. As long as you haven't failed until you stop, so keep going. Change the date, reschedule, get the priorities right, keep going.
Yeah, agree. There's going to be stumbling blocks along the way, and tripping over and hurdles and whatever you want to call it, and that's part of life, I think. And life does, you know, get in the way, or do if we want to call it that, getting in the way, or delay things. So how do you then keep motivated when aiming to your goal? If things do get in the way, if, you know, I'm sure listeners are out there agreeing with what that woman told you, and it's a common problem or, you know, annoyance to get in the way of goals. But how do you keep motivated when you're aiming for your goal?
I think there's a couple of things. You treat the obstacles as part of the process. They will always be there. And as a matter of fact, when you look at how I mentioned that when I wrote the book, I then reviewed and researched the neuroscience behind it. So I looked at some of the things that I had done and that had worked, and thought, well, why does this work? And then I went looking for the neuroscience and said, well, okay, that's why this works. And why does this fail? Well, that's why this fails. So one of the things about setting goals is visualizations. That's a big thing. Who uses visualizations? Everybody. Everybody from artists to sportsmen to they're even using visualization now in hospitals teaching surgeons. So they visualize the whole process before they do it. Everybody's using visualizations. So part of that visualization process, and we can talk a little bit more about that, further on if you like. But the point I want to make here is that the neuroscience says when you visualize it, when you see yourself in it, your subconscious says, oh, we're done. Your subconscious cannot tell the difference between the vividly imagined and reality. So let me give you an example.
Yeah.
It's dark. You walk into your house, there's nobody home, there's no lights on. You open the front door, you flip the light switch, and there's something on the floor that looks like a snake. What would you do? Well, your heart rate goes up, the adrenaline rushes, you will jump. And then you look at it and think, oh, it's just a belt that somebody's left on the floor. Right? But you vividly imagined a snake. It was a snake for that second. That's how it works. So when you visualize, your brain can say, oh, that's wonderful. I love this. You get that kind of neurochemical hit in your brain, and it says, we're done. We've completed this. You visualized this so well, we don't actually have to do any work. So the neuroscience says what you then need to do is to ground the visualization. And the way you do that is you then start thinking about the obstacles. You think of all of the things that can come up, and then, you know, well, I call it the witch exercise. What's the worst that can happen? And you think about what's the worst that can happen, write all those things down, and then come up with a couple of strategies to deal with each one. And that does several things for you. First of all, if they come up, you have strategies. If they don't come up, well, it doesn't matter. You're programming your reticular activating system, which is another useful tool in goal setting. We can talk about that a bit later as well.
Yeah.
And so your reticular activating system now knows what to look for. So you'll get kind of an advanced warning of these issues if they come up. And the fourth thing you're doing is just adding to your repertoire of how you might handle any issue that comes up, even if you haven't visualized it. So what that does is tells your subconscious, yes, that was a lovely visualization, but there is still work to do. Mm. So you bring the obstacles in as part of the process. And then when they come, okay, what can I do with this? And the thing that keeps you motivated, obviously, is the end goal and the end result, sorry. Mm. But that's how you deal with those things. And the other big thing that slows people down is procrastination. Mm. And there's a simple neuro trick for that. And the easiest way to get over procrastination is to start. Just start. And the way that you start is you set yourself a really simple goal. So let me give you an example. When I was training to run a marathon, I put stickers up, post-it notes up around the house that said, I'll get up at 4 a.m, I'll go outside and I'll put my shoes on because I'm a marathon runner. That's actually a thing called an implementation affirmation. It just is, it's an intention. So all you're doing is setting an intention. So my intention was get up, go outside, put my shoes on. That was it. That was my commitment. If I wanted to go back to bed after that, fine. I never did though. So you can set yourself an intention to say, when I get home from work, so event, then I will do something. I will work on my goal for 10 minutes because, and a reason, I'm a successful goal setter or I want this, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is committing to 10 minutes. The chances are, though, that you'll be still sitting there an hour later because once you start, you then get a neurochemical hit. Your brain loves progress. It loves that feedback. So you'll be sitting there later. So I, you know, that's what I do. I put those things up, put them on your car, put them in your wallet, wherever you're going to see them. When I get home from work, then I'll spend 10 minutes on my goal. So that's another way to keep yourself motivated and to get over that, out of that procrastination loop. And literally, if you only want to, you know, if you only want to spend the 10 minutes, spend the 10 minutes. But that gives you, that's starting then to develop a habit and you're developing, it's development of a habit. So if you do the 10 minutes and it's only 10 minutes, well, that's fine. And the next day you might do 11 minutes. The next day you might do an hour. And then on the weekend you might do 3 hours. But if you can set that habit, just commit to the small thing. And it's not scary. Like anybody can do 10 minutes of anything. move forward.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
That's how I motivate myself.
Yeah, I am in. I'm really intrigued by you visualizing the goal, but also putting in there visualizing or thinking about the obstacles. Like most of the time, you hear people talking about goals and focusing on the goal, the positive, and don't really think about the obstacles beforehand. That's something that I am really intrigued about, because some people could say that, oh, you're focusing on the negative. Well, what would you say to those people? Do you get that?
Absolutely do. But what you're doing now is you've just had the experience with the visualization. And when you do the visualization, you should take the visualization a lot further than being visual. When I wrote my book, I needed a word for how do you use all of the senses. And centralization was not kind of the word I thought I could use. So I came up with a fairly clumsy term, and I called it thinkualization. So you're thinking about all of the senses. So when you create that visualization, in inverted commas, try and put in use of all of the senses. So, you know, sight and touch and sound, and also there's a couple of others that you can add that people don't regularly associate with senses. One of them is temperature. So if that makes a difference, like say you're visualizing something where you're sitting in front of a fireplace and it's cold outside, there's temperature. And the other one is proprioception. And proprioception is where your body is in space. I'm standing, I'm sitting, I'm walking. That also helps to build that whole image. But so you've just had that experience and now you're going to the obstacles. Your brain views the obstacles now in a different light. And the obstacles are just, okay, these are the things that we have to do to get that. They're treated as part of the journey. So you're not focusing on the negative, but the neuroscience says you do need to ground that visualization so your subconscious realizes there's still work to do. You could also, rather than look at the obstacles, you should look at the obstacles at some stage anyway, in order to understand what's coming, in order to, you know, to program yourself to deal with them when they get there. But you could also just look at what you have to do. Okay, we've had this visualization. What do I have to do now? Well, today I have to do this and this, and then by next week I have to do this, etc. So it's just about grounding that visualization so your subconscious knows, okay, we're not finished yet, we've got work to do. So let's do it. So there's a couple of other psychological neuro traits. There's one called the Obshchina effect. It was a Russian scientist. And what she had worked out is that your brain wants you to finish things that it started. So that's when if you start something and you don't finish, you get that little nagging, oh, that's right, I've got to finish this in the back of your brain, and then you procrastinate and blah, blah, blah. So that kind of, because you're doing the looking at the obstacles and you're looking at what you need to do, your brain is going, okay, we need to do this now. Okay, you've told me that you want this, and you've told me that we have to do these tasks, so I'm now going to nag you until we've done these tasks. So you recruit that on your side as well. So when you get that nagging, think, yeah, I do, I have to go do this. And if you're in that kind of procrastinating mode, you say, well, I'll go this for 2 minutes, but do something. So you're using all of these neuro tools in your brain to drive you in that direction.
That's interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But do you actually work with people on their goals and talk about this?
Yes, I do.
Because I'm still going to throw another one at you. And I actually believe and love what you're saying, but have you ever had a client say to you, oh, look, this, you've prepared me for the obstacles, but there just looks like there's so many, I give up. I don't want to go for this goal because there's just too much in the way. And does that even make them procrastinate even more?
That's a good question. Nobody said that, but
oh, good.
It's possible that someone could.
Well, I'm thinking of
that situation.
Sorry, I was just thinking of someone who might be listening and thinking that and going, oh, my goal looks too big, too, you know, out there. And I can think of this, 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 and this, and this, and list a whole heap of obstacles that could, you know, very well lead them to just going, no. And what would you say to that person?
Yes. Well, what I would do, I would look at that exercise and I'd say the first thing, so you've created this list of obstacles and issues. We would now rate them in terms of their the probability that they're going to happen. So if you've got meteor crashing through the roof, we'll rate that as zero. And so we're going to, you know, strip away the ones that are probably unlikely.
Great.
Probably
idea.
Then focus on pick the ones that are possible but more likely, and then just start generating. Generating responses to that. If this comes up, what am I going to do? Well, if this comes up, I'm going to go and call, I know a consultant in this area, I'm going to go and call him and sort this out. Or you might even say, right, I'm going to email John now. John, I'm doing this property development. If this issue comes up, what should I do? You know, and come up with strategies for dealing with some of those. I think it's more about being realistic in what can come up and then just prioritizing them.
Yeah.
If you come up with 217 of them and they're all priority one, you're just procrastinating. you don't want to do this. Go find something else to do.
Well, yeah, and it comes to the reasons, I suppose, why you wanted to achieve this goal in the first place, doesn't it? You know, if your why and your drive is not, you know, big enough, maybe it's not your goal and it's somebody else's.
That's a very good point. The first realization that we all need to make is that everything we do is for ourselves. Everything.
Mm.
If we help a little old lady across the road, it's because of an obligation that we feel. So we're doing it for them, for ourselves. If you help out a friend, you're doing it for yourself. Is this a bad thing? No. This is how it works.
Mm.
So everything we do is for ourselves. So how do we utilize that? And the reason why is it's a big point for a goal setting. And the reason why needs to be as deep emotionally as you can get it. And one of the reasons for that, according to the neuroscience, is that the decision-making is obviously a massive part of goal setting. And the decision-making is done in the limbic area of the brain, which is also the seat of emotion. Now, the limbic area of the brain has no capacity for speech. That's why it's so difficult to explain how you feel, because you're connecting the words that come from another part of the brain with the emotion from the limbic system, and it's very difficult to do that. So in order to drive your subconscious, if you can make your reason why a deep emotional reason, and that's the thing that you're focusing on each day, that will then drive you too through those obstacles. So there was an example that I used in the book, a businessman who wanted to develop the business to the point where he could buy a very expensive upmarket car. Why do you want this car? Well, you know, my car's a bit old. No, that's not a reason. Why do you want this car? Well, you know, there's a few things wrong with the other one. Well, take it to the mechanic and get them fixed. Why do you want this car? When we push deep enough, what we actually found is the reason is that he psychologically needed this symbol of success to represent that to his clients. When he went and saw them or went and picked them up, he wanted to do that in this symbol of success. And that was a psychological reason for him. Did he ever have to tell anybody why he wanted this car? Absolutely not. But he knew now. And that was, so when he would think about, I'm too tired, I don't want, John, do you want this car? Yes. Why do you want this car? Well, yes, I really need this for my business to be successful. I really need to see, for people to see me this way. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? No, I don't know. But this was his. So if you can find that deep reason why, that will definitely drive you through.
I agree.
Good question, Donna.
I agree with what you're saying there, because I always dig deeper. I call it, you know, digging deep, really. And even when you say he looks successful, but why do you want to look successful? And it goes deeper and deeper into really personal values, and it, you know, ends up coming back down to love most of the time. You know, love in a relationship, love for family, you know, wanting to even get to that point where they are so professional and doing well with their business, giving them more freedom to spend with their family or partner and that sort of stuff. So I totally agree and get what you're saying, and that example is just a brilliant one. But I actually want to get back to your individual goal yourself, Chris, because I think that's what we started with, and that's really what isn't a great example to relate to. So out of the different steps that you've spoken about in, you know, in depth with neuroscience, etc., what was one of the difficult steps that you faced, and what was the most challenging, and what kept you going in that step? Like, let's just use an example of one step.
In terms of one of the most difficult things to deal with is fear. And we all have it for one reason or another. For some it's fear of failure, and for some it's actually fear of success. The idea of being successful frightens them. I've done a lot of work on myself over the years. I call myself a recovering introvert. It's been very chronically shy. My idea of a good time was go to a party, find one person, talk to them all night, know everything about them by the time I left. They didn't even remember my name, and that was a great night. So I used to do exercises like I would force myself to talk to people in lifts. And in the lift, it's great because you've got 30 seconds, right? Then you get out. Or crossing at traffic lights. And if I didn't like the conversation, I would just walk the opposite direction to them at the other side of the light. So that's how I kind of started to face those fears and get over those issues with introversion. So I think that fear in the background is always there. And the way to move past that is through things like visualization, understanding why you want something, and even extending it further to understand how what you want is going to affect other people. So that example you gave, that if my business is successful, it's going to be good for my family, it's going to be good for my friend, it's going to allow my kids opportunities they didn't have before. So extending that reason why how it affects other people. So when the fear comes up, you think, well, I need to move past this. All those reasons why can be realized. And the other thing about the fear, again, is this is the same as the what's the worst that can happen exercise. What am I afraid of? What does it look like? How will I deal with it? If this comes up, I will do this. So putting a kind of facing the fear and identifying, putting a label on it and putting a response to it, that helps. Otherwise, it just kind of sits in the back of your mind. It doesn't have any form or substance, and you just know it's there. Try and make it. Try and give it some form and substance. And so when it's down on a piece of paper, you can, that's what I think I'm afraid of. So how can I deal with that? And it may be that you have to get some advice from somebody else. You might need skills that you need developing, or it might be mindset, you know, some mindset coaching that you need to move through some of this stuff. It could be some kind of counseling if it's some kind of personal or family issue. But at least then you say, okay, I've identified that. I either can develop a strategy for it or know that I need to develop a strategy for it. And that is just facing your fear. Jump out of the plane. You have to face it. That's ultimately.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
And even you can face your fear in your mind too. And as I said before, if you vividly imagine something, your body will react as if it's actually happening.
Mm.
So you can visualize how you would respond or what it feels like, and then you can change it. And if you've had a bad experience, you can do the same thing. It's called reframing. So where there is a bad experience, you relive the experience, and then you change it to say, well, actually, the outcome I would have preferred, or the way I would have preferred this to go, is like this. Memories are not videotapes. They're constructed every time you remember something.
Mm.
Every time you remember something and change it, the construction has changed. So when you, each time you remember, you change it. So you never actually have the same memory twice. And they're using this technique in PTSD support now to deal with that.
That's post...
Post-traumatic
stress. Yes. I was just wanting to clarify that. So when you're talking about changing the framework and with the end result, are you talking about visualizing that for what's going to happen in the future with your goal, or what? How exactly do you mean that?
In that case, I'm talking about a previously lived experience.
Mm.
So you remember the experience and then you just reframe it. You can change the events if you like, but what you're really doing is reframing your attitude and your belief and what you feel about it.
Yeah.
Such that you're taking all the sting and all the negative out of it. What that then does is says, well, now I've got something else in my repertoire. If this issue ever comes up again, this is how I'm going to deal with it.
Yeah.
If I have this altercation with this person again, this is how I'm going to deal with it. And you can turn that into a much more productive and positive approach and at the same time taking all of that negative sting and that fear out of the situation. So it can be for both the past and the future.
Mm. That's so much information. Oh, you know what I was going to ask you, and I don't know now because you've given so much advice. If you could go back to the beginning of this challenge that you're talking about in the beginning of your challenge, what advice would you give yourself? But you've given us so much advice. Is that the advice you'd give yourself, or is there something that you would change and make different about your journey to get to the property development and that, you know, great outstanding goal that you've
achieved? Yeah, there is. I would advise myself to do it sooner. Do it now. Don't wait around. Just get on with it. Time is going to pass anyway, so do it sooner.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice to myself.
Oh, great advice.
Yeah.
So what was the most rewarding thing from achieving this major goal, like for you personally?
It allowed me... Yeah, okay. It allowed me to create something from nothing. It allowed me to get out of the environment where I'm working for and responsible to somebody else. Now, property development, you're still, you know, there are a lot of responsibilities and you're still responsible to others, but it's not the same way. That was one of those amorphous, fuzzy goals. Was I can't die without having built something from scratch, because I was pretty much, I've been employed either mostly as a contractor, but working for somebody else, and so I needed for myself to do something else, and that this property journey is now creating that for me. So yes, I have a business partner, etc. But it's where there was nothing, there is now something. So mm-hmm. that was really important. And the goal setting journey and writing the book, and then teaching, that was another example of that. It was nothing, and now there is something. And it was me. It was my inception, and my drive, my ideas, my activity, my fears. Those, all of those things, not, okay, you turn up at work, you work 100 hours for the week. That wasn't very pleasant.
No.
You know, you put in your 40 hours and you go home, and that just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
That's what it's given me.
Yeah, I get it. Oh, great. So when preparing for a goal such as this, or any big goal for our listeners, just to, you know, get an idea, what changes did you need to make in your life?
When you set a goal, you're doing two things. You're saying, this is what I'm going to do, and now I have to decide, this is what I'm going to give up, because you can't do everything. Mm-hmm. So what you have to do is you have to make room for it. Mm-hmm. So if you're working ridiculous hours, you're probably not going to be, you're not going to fit it in, and that's going to be frustrating. So what the changes you have to make is you have to make room for it. You have to decide, and that's what I do when I'm coaching people. I say, okay, this is great. We've set three or four goals here, and we talk about how much time you're going to spend on these, and, you know, what the timetables are on them, etc. And the next question is, now what are you not going to do? We have to identify those things. You're going to write them down, and these are the things you're not going to do. So I'm not going to watch TV for 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm going to do it. So, okay, what are you going to do? Well, 1 hour or 4 hours a week, or only on the weekends. So that's a necessary step. So making room in your life to accommodate the goal, I think that's an important step.
Yeah, I agree. We all have 24 hours, don't we? So yep. It's just, what do we do with that? And yeah, but you were working 100 hours a week. So yes. How did you personally do that? Were you working at the same time as starting this goal, or did you just completely stop work?
No, in the 100-hour, I was working 100-hour weeks, it's when I finished that. I did that for nearly a year for a particular organisation.
Yeah.
And it was at that point I said, I re-evaluated everything, and that's where it was after that the idea for writing the book, all of that occurred. But it was during, I think I was working, I was only working 80-hour weeks when I decided to do the marathon training. So that was why it's 4 in the morning, because that was the only time I had. But I can't recommend that to anybody. It's just an awful existence. Yes. And not only that, I live on the Gold Coast, and I worked in Brisbane. So that was an hour's drive. So 2 hours a day when I came home was spent in the car.
Yeah.
Because often I didn't come home. Yeah, can't recommend that.
No. So it's really making a shift in your life and that decision, yeah?
Yeah, And leaving that job was probably the best thing I ever did. It completely changed my life. I was doing, you know, what I was doing things on the side before, but now are a focus, because I decided, no, I need to do this for me. I'm not spending 100-hour weeks for somebody who doesn't appreciate it.
Yeah.
For me. So that literally was that was a life-changing event.
So it's rearranging your priorities, I suppose, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So what I'm not sure if you've answered that question, but what advice would you share to others who are listening, who are thinking of going for their new big scary goal? Just the first thing, advice. So they may be listening to this on their way to work, or at work in their lunch break, or while they're working, or at the gym or wherever, and just thinking in the same mindset as you were in then. Oh, look, I'm working ridiculous hours. This is for someone else, for someone who doesn't appreciate what I'm doing, and I don't really, I'm not really into their business anyway. Like, I want to do my own thing. So what advice would you give us?
I'll just pick up on the key term that you said, big scary goal. The thing about big scary goals is that you can't do them all at once. So you have to break them down. And now they're not big, scary goals.
Yes.
So what you, sure, you have the, it's like, let me give you an analogy. There's a mountain in the distance and you're standing on another mountain. And to get to that mountain, you have to cross the desert and you have to walk through the jungle and you have to cross the rivers and climb the rock outcrops and you know, through the long grass, etc. Each of those things is a separate chunk. You just chunk it down. Okay, I've got to cross the desert. Done. Across the desert. Look at the mountain. Mountain's still there. That's still the goal.
Yes.
What's next? Okay, now we've got to weave our way through this jungle. You're just chunking things down along the path. And to be honest, your focus 90% of the time is on the path. It's on those tasks. What are you doing along the path? You're setting little goals. Yes. I have to finish this by this day.
Yeah.
That needs to be completed before that. So you're always setting goals. And all of those goals are just the path to the big scary one. By the time you're halfway there, it's not so scary anymore.
By the
time you're three quarters of the way there, you might think, actually, I don't want that goal. It's not scary enough. Let's change it to a different mountain. Let's pick that other mountain over there. It's bigger. Let's do that. And that's fine.
Yeah.
So that's really the secret, is to chunk it down, all the other things that we talked about before, and focus on that path and focus on those bits. So setting the big scary goal, sure, put it out there, then work out, well, what are the four bigger things that I have to do to get that goal? And then take each of those and say, okay, within that big milestone, what are the four other things that I have to do? So, for example, if you're going to, I don't know, let me think of an example. If you're going to buy a house, right, so what do you have to do? Well, I have to have a deposit. That's a milestone. I have to find a house. So I have to decide I'm going to build, I'm going to buy, I'm going to have to find an area to live in. And I have to find a house. So that's a milestone. But what do I have to do to get there? So what do I have to do for the deposit? Well, I go and talk to a mortgage broker and get some advice. And I'm going to change my spending habits so I can save. I'm going to sell off various things that I don't need anymore. You know, so you're creating little goals within each of the milestones. And then the milestones add up to, I'm now living in my new house.
Yeah,
that's how you do it. So it just takes away all of the fear, and it gives, you can set the time frame, you can set the path. If you're working ridiculous hours, it's just going to take a bit longer.
Yeah,
have the procrastination techniques, have the reason why, do the visualizations, just
love it,
focus on that path.
Oh, I could talk to you for hours, Chris. I love it. I love what you're saying, and I'm sure the listeners do too. I want to focus on your book now, because whatever you're saying here, I think it's basically in your book, yeah. And I really want to share a bit more of that. The title again.
The title is Goal Setting for People Who Can't Set Goals.
That
was really where... the story about that is that many years ago, I've been in various organisations and, you know, training, I've had training and various things, and I'd done some goal setting training, and it was completely useless. It really was.
Oh,
it was
really?
You know, they might as well said, set a goal, put a time frame on it, and go.
Okay? Oh,
now what?
Okay. You know, that's a bit disappointing.
You know, you get the silly things like, what kind of car do you want? I want a Ferrari. Okay, put a date on it and go. But what?
How do you get to that? Enough. Yeah, right. Yeah, the steps you need.
So that's where all of that come from, because a lot of that stuff out there is simple things like, the common advice is when you set a goal, go tell the world.
Mm.
The advice has got, it's sound to a degree because it's about accountability. But the neuroscience says, no, don't do that at all. While that goal is in its infancy, until you've got a decent, defendable elevator pitch and got some runs on the board, don't tell anybody. Maybe a mentor that you can work with who's got a vested interest in your success. Don't tell anybody else. Then when it's got some stability and substance, absolutely tell everybody else, because they may want to come on the journey. So there's a whole lot of stuff out there that's not the appropriate advice. But that's where the idea of the book came from, and that's where the title came from, because I was one of those people.
What I love about the title is it's just so self-explanatory. And I love the book. I've read it. And I love the examples of, you know, all the people that you've spoken to in that book. And was there one sort of, because I talk about steps every time too, like, you know how you talk about chunking it down? I call it baby steps. same thing. Yeah. So that's just my terminology. But I really wonder, it was just through speaking with them, because I know you don't, you know, able to write everything of what everyone has said, but what was the common theme amongst those people? I was one of them, by the way. That I just have to throw that in. And I really enjoyed reading it, but also you know, not just about my bits but about others. But through speaking with us all, was there one common thing that you could explain about people that, you know, are high achievers, really want to get somewhere and have achieved their goal, and that could you know, hopefully inspire listeners to go do that or get that or whatever it is that was in that you found that was inspiring and most in common about them?
The people that I interviewed. So what I did was I wrote the book around what I do and what works and what doesn't work and the neuroscience, etc. And then I decided I'd interview a whole bunch of people to find out what they did, and then I weave that into the book. And in the book, you'll notice they're in a separate box called a PLY, people like you. Yeah. So they're just like you. And there are people there that absolutely, there was one guy who was absolutely a driven individual. He took Harvey Norman's computer business from nothing.
Yes,
so $300 million a year. Right? Yeah. He just drew. You know where people line up at midnight to go and get the latest thing from the store? That was actually his idea. Harvey Norman started that with some version of Windows. He said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to open the store at midnight and we're going to advertise this. And people will line up. And Jerry Harry said, you better be right. And he was. So there's people like that. All the way through to people who just, I don't know how to set goals. I've kind of, you know, discovered my way into it, and this is what I do. I think, however, the key traits are consistency and persistence. Mm. That's, so if you want to develop, if you're listening to this and you want to develop traits that will get you to, you know, get your goal setting moving ahead, focus on those. So consistency means do something every day, something towards your goal. And persistence means just keep doing it. Focus on the path, look at the goal occasionally, but just keep going. Those two traits, all the other stuff, it'll just fall in behind. And that was the common theme, I think.
Okay, awesome. I want to, find out where can people get this book? Tell us. And we will put the link below this too. So
I'll send you some link. But Booktopia's got it. You know, most of those. Amazon's got the ebook, but Booktopia and Book Depository and those kinds of guys, they've got QBD, I think. They've got it.
Yeah. I'll is it on your website as well?
Yeah, you can buy it directly from me if you want. Yeah.
What's your website?
It's www.chrislchristoff.com, or you can go to www.youcansetgoals.com and it'll redirect you to that one.
All right, we'll put both of those links up so people can go and purchase that, because it is an awesome read. I highly recommend it. I got so much out of that, and especially your, you know, background in neuroscience, and, you know, something that I didn't fully know or understand, and you put it in an easy read way.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Because sometimes people just go look at those words and go, "Oh, neuroscience,
that's a scary word."
Too heavy to me. But also using the examples of, you know, the many everyday people that you mentioned. What was it? How did you title them? people like you.
Yeah, wise. People like you. Yeah.
Yes, I love that.
You'll be able to relate to at least
exactly.
One of them.
Yeah. And that's what I love about this book. It was such, you know, an easy read.
Whoops.
That's all right.
That was my phone.
We can edit that out. That again.
I've got a ringtone that's a Spanish song because I'm trying to learn Spanish at the moment. Yeah. That's another goal. The goal is to own property in Spain. So
oh, wow. Okay. But as I was saying, that's what I love about the book. It is an easy read. It's not too heavy, but it has awesome knowledge in there. And it is something that you can follow and, you know, aspire to achieve your goals. And speaking of inspiring, who inspires you, Chris, and why? Who's your superhero?
Oh, geez. I think it's, I don't read fiction anymore because there's no time. There's so much amazing stuff out there. And it's whatever book I'm reading at the moment, I think is the inspiration for me. And I've read some amazing books over the last few years. I'm currently reading Mark Manson's second book.
Okay.
His first one, I read that. It's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
yes, I did hear about that. Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes, his approach and his vocabulary are very interesting. Mm-hmm. But I really liked that, and now I'm reading his second one. And one of the things that I do is when I read a book, I'll read it cover to cover, probably twice. And I write in it, and I like paper books because I can write in it and I can, you know, I can record thoughts and notes and, no, I don't agree with that. And then 16 pages later you go, oh, okay, now that makes sense. Yes, I do agree with this, that sort of stuff. But ultimately I'll have a whole bunch of questions and I'll email the authors. I'll track them down, find their email addresses and email them. And 9 times out of 10 they'll reply. So I actually had some a bit of correspondence with Mark over the first book. And then when he came to Australia to do his book tour, I actually met him. We had another conversation, which was really useful. So it's those people, and my current focus is on books like that are really about how the brain works, how you can exploit your own brain, how you can make it work. Because I'm also reading there's two books by Norman Doidge, The Brain That Heals Itself, and The Brain That Changes Itself, and the sequel to that is something about how the brain heals itself. I can't remember, but there's a lot of neuroscience in that, talking about how you can actually use your brain to heal yourself and other techniques that are occurring in the world at the moment. So that's my focus at the moment, is that human potential, the neuroscience behind it, what works. And why it works. So those sorts of people, they inspire me. So when I write the second book, it'll be even more substantial.
Oh, I look forward to the second book coming out. Is that happening soon, or you'll have to let us know?
Well, I'm playing with some ideas actually, because I was talking to somebody the other day who runs a business workshops that I'm probably going to get involved with. And we were talking about retirees, and a lot of retirees, they quit work and then they think, oh, what do I do now? And the secondary problem is that, especially for men, their job is their identity. It's who they are.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about that. And I'm also thinking that people need to be taught goal setting early. They need to be taught it at school.
Yeah.
So targeting probably teenagers, because they're going at that stage they've got to, you know, they can realize these concepts.
Yeah
So I'm playing with those ideas at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. We'll have to, you know, keep me posted about that. So I think I'm assuming, but maybe they say never assume, but I'm thinking you must have a favorite quote or mantra that keeps you aiming for your goals. Do you have one to share with us? What's your one favorite one?
Well, to be honest, it's Winston Churchill. Never, ever give up. Never stop. Because for me, the minute I've not failed until I've stopped. If I quit something, then I can say, well, potentially I failed at this. If I keep going and drive through, and that has to be done sensibly also, because there's some goals you really just, okay, no, stop. This is taking up too much resource. It's not going to pan out. Quit, stop it. As part of the process. So, yeah. But never quit developing, never quit growing, never quit moving ahead. So never give up.
Yeah, awesome. I think
that's the one that drives me the most.
Great note to end with. Hey, you've helped me personally a lot in this interview, and also I'm sure many listeners. But basically, I just want to check with you. Is there something more that you really wanted to share with us today?
Well, what I like, if anybody's got questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah. All right.
So we can put my email address in there as well. So,
Oh, okay. But great idea.
Hunt down authors' email addresses and I bother them and get answers to questions. So I'm happy to do that too.
I agree. And sometimes people are a bit too scared and think you're untouchable or something. But I always talk about this, even in my book, I mention about, you know, well, if you don't know how, get help and speak to the experts or the ones who have already done it. So I really encourage people to approach those who know or who've already done it or experienced that goal, or, you know, even just goals in general. That's really good of you to do that. Thanks, Chris. All right. So I'm going to plug your book one last time, Goal Setting for People Who Can't Set Goals. Go and get it. It is an awesome read. I personally recommend it. And we'll leave the links below to go and get that. Thank you so much for your time, Chris. Really enjoyed catching up.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Ready, Set, Goal podcast with Donna Campisi. Do you know someone else who could benefit from learning how to turn their dream into reality and help make a plan to achieve their goals? Please take a moment to share this and other episodes via your podcast app, email, or social media channels. Each share helps us reach listeners just like you who can benefit from our content.